Major League Baseball trade deadline, I think we still call it the non-waiver trade deadline, came and went yesterday at 4 o'clock Eastern. And Kevin Barker, the Toronto Blue Jays, in the middle of losing a game to the Baltimore Orioles. We'll have more about that later. Well, I mean, they put it this way. As I wrote today, they managed to give Blue Jays fans their cake and eat it too. They made some additions to the team. The team should be stronger. I don't know if I'd say better. We need to wait and see. But they addressed some needs. And so far, the highest prospect we know that they gave up was Kendall Williams, he was rated 13th in the Blue Jays system by MLB Pipeline. He's going to the Dodgers for Ross Stripling. Quite frankly, Kendall Williams wasn't going to be a factor in the Blue Jays pitching plans for the next 3 years, given the depth of the organization. So Kevin, they brought in Taijuan Walker ahead of the trade deadline. Always good, kids. Always good to make your big move before the deadline. Ask Alex Anthopoulos about that. Brought in Taijuan Walker, Robbie Ray, Ross Stripling, and Jonathan Villar. So, Kevin, what did you make of the moves, and which of these moves do you think will be the most impactful? Give me them 1, 2, 3, 4 in terms of impact on the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I like the moves. I'm with you. I think they did enough to make their team better. I don't know if it, you know, moves the needle when it comes to playoff time. Are any of these guys going to move it to where it takes them to the next level? I'm not real sure. You know, what the pitching that they added keeps the Hatches and the Baruckies. And, you know, I know Merriweather's starting today, but I'd rather see him in the bullpen. Maybe, you know, from here on after today, that keeps them, those guys in the bullpen, keeps them in a certain routine, keeps them comfortable. You're going to get the most out of them down the stretch when it matters. I like the Taijuan Walker move. You know, I think he's a little bit more mechanically sound. He's a quick worker. I like his fastball. He attacks the zone. His secondary pitches, his sliders, his best pitch. Don't overuse that. His split finger, you know, it's meh. You know, when it's don't throw it a bunch. You know, I know he's given up 5 homers, 4 of those are against lefties. He's got to command the fastball a little bit better. He does that. He'll give them some quality innings. The Robbie Ray thing, what do you do with him? That's the thing. You know, the Stripling, which one of those guys starts for you? You know, is it Ray? Is it Stripling? Do you like Ray out of the bullpen? You know, there's some rumblings that they might do that. I think, you know, stop getting on dairy-free diets. Stop changing windups. After a year last year where he went 174 innings, he struck out 235 guys. Why are you, for anything, changing what you do? You know, I know it's the thing of, I got a guy where he can go longer in games. You want to try and do that, change some mechanical things. Me, let it eat for 5 innings, see how many people you can strike out. He's an elevated guy. He's a left-handed guy who can pitch up. You know, attack that. Stop trying to pitch down. That's why you see fly ball rates for him going up. It'll be interesting to see what Petey does with him. You know, can he just get him out of the stretch long enough to give them some quality wherever he's at, whether it's bullpen or starter? The Vogelbach thing, I'm not real sure what he's going to give you. He'll give you a little bit of a threat. I don't know how much production he will give you, but the Jonathan VR thing, that's okay, right? He's not an outfielder. He's not a second baseman. Can he play a little third? He hasn't done it in forever. You know, he can fill in at shortstop. He's good enough there. He's got a quick enough move. You know, offensively, that's the versatility. He'll hit ninth. He'll make your lineup a little bit longer. He can run into one. He can steal a base. So he'll bring something there. I like their team. You know, they're competitive. They're young. They don't know any better. They're going to get their foot down a lot and get it singing. It's going to be fun to watch them the next 25 games.
A couple of things about Robbie Ray, and Shai Davidi talked about this yesterday, and this is, I think, maybe as much an observation as anything else on the part of Shai, and it makes a lot of sense. I think the Jays are going to get creative down the stretch with their pitching, and I wonder if in Robbie Ray we're not going to find ourselves in a position where the Jays may not at least consider doing with him what the Red Sox did with Andrew Miller. Now, the difference with that is, one, when Andrew Miller was converted from a starter to a reliever, he had a shocking loss of velocity when that decision was made by the Red Sox. Two, and this is perhaps where it gets really dicey, Robbie Ray's not under contract with the Blue Jays for next year. So if the Blue Jays, Robbie Ray, I'm sure he's a fine professional, et cetera, et cetera. But if I'm going into my free agent year, I don't know how willing I'm going to be to experiment for a month. Even given the fact that my results as a starter this year have not been good. Mm-hmm. The other thing about Robbie Ray, and this gets to your point about mechanics, the Jays will have to figure out. I mean, it's not just the diet that caused him to change his mechanics. It's not just the fact that he was bored and was sitting around twiddling his thumbs one day and said, I'm going to try this. Yeah, you have to go back a bit deeper. He suffered an oblique injury, and it was at that point, that was a couple of years ago, he had an oblique injury that he started to tinker a bit with his mechanics. And, look, as I said, I don't know if they're better now than they were at the trade deadline.
They're not any worse.
But they're stronger. And what I mean by that is I'm not going to see Brandon Drury or... I was going to say Joe Panik, but he's actually played pretty good shortstop. I'm going to see Jonathan Villar more than I'm going to see those guys. That makes the Blue Jays stronger. As you said, Stripling and Ray and Walker, let's assume two of them make the rotation or two of them have an impact in the rotation. Then all of a sudden, you've got Hatch, Kay, Borucki, and Merriweather. You've got them settled into the bullpen. Now you got Ken Giles coming back. You're going to have a ton of arms, but you also have a lot of options. So that's kind of where I look at those deals. Jonathan Villar, I still think the Blue Jays have an issue with third base. He hasn't played third base since 2016. And I don't know how willing he's another guy. Now he's another guy who's going to be a free agent. And how willing are these guys going to be to do all this stuff in a month? But again, having said it, they didn't give up anything of immediate value. And in Taiwan Walker, the thing to me that stands out about Taiwan Walker is the fact that the Blue Jays went out and made that deal ahead of the deadline. They got an extra start out of Taiwan Walker by doing what they did. And that start was not only a win, but it also saved the Blue Jays bullpen, because that was a bullpen day. Jordan Romano went down with an injury at the same time. We haven't talked about that yet. That's another thing. That takes away your most effective reliever out of the bullpen. If this team does get a playoff spot, I think we're going to look back at Taiwan Walker's start and say, you know what? The innings he gave the Jays, the effect that had on the bullpen will go down as one of the key games of the year. Because it could have all spun apart there. It could have all spun apart there. Bullpen day, no Jordan Romano. It could have all come apart.
Yeah, well, you're getting six more starts out of him now. Well, you got that one start. Now you got five more. If I did my math right, he's going to get a Boston start, two Yankee starts, a Philadelphia Philly start, and an Orioles start. You should figure he'll have four, hopefully, quality starts out of those five. That would give this entire team a boost down the stretch, especially right playoff time. Young guys, young team, young lineup, young where it matters, young catchers. Put the fingers down. They're shaking yes to it. They're attacking the strike zone. They're not walking guys. I think that's what they wanted to fill their rotation with. Stripling's mm-hmm. giving up some home runs. That'll be something they have to monitor. Better fastball command. He's got a big-time 12-6 hook. That'll be something they can use. Maybe they run him in the bullpen. Robbie Ray, can he throw strike one? That's down 15% from last year. It's can you simplify it enough to maximize what they do well? The Jonathan Villar thing for me, Jeff, if I come up to him and I say, you either don't play or you go play third, which one do you think he'd rather do? He'll play third. It's that kind of thing.
Yeah, but I'm saying you're also let's be clear. You're not getting a Gold Glover at third base. You're getting a guy who hasn't played there for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. Well, so, they really don't have one.
As I said, that to me remains the one outstanding, the one outstanding issue. I know, and Buck and I were both on Blue Jay Central, and Buck made the case as well. I thought they'd get another fly ball chaser in the outfield. Not an everyday guy, but I thought they would get somebody else who could upgrade the defense. And maybe VR can play center field and address that situation. But, having said that, and I think both Buck and I agreed on this. Who are you going to take out of that everyday outfield right now? They're all hitting for the most part. I love Lourdes Gurriel Jr. I love what he's bringing to this team. Yeah, Teoscar Hernandez is going to have the odd brain fart. Same thing with Randall Grichuk, but they're hitting 300 right now. Like, there's part of what you have to do at the trade deadline, and I remember Alex talking about this one time, you have to sit down and say, okay, what did I think I had at the start of the year? What do I now have in front of me? And given the development of Teoscar Hernandez and Randall Grichuk, I think you're obligated to stick with those guys. Those are your guys, right? And I know you got them from another organization, but you committed long-term to Grichuk. You've ridden the ups and downs with Teoscar Hernandez. Those are your guys. So you've committed to them. Let's see where it goes. If we get through this year and at the end of the season we've come away thinking, wow, Teoscar Hernandez and Randall Grichuk not only hit, but they played pretty decent defense, we've solved what we thought was going to be a huge issue going into the season. So it's what I like. And, you know, I would urge people to go back and look at the moves the Blue Jays have made under Ross Atkins at the trade deadline. They've done a lot of really good business. They have taken, and here's how what I mean by good business. They have taken players who didn't want to be here, who were not going to be part of the team next year, or who were just diminishing assets. They've turned them into guys like Reese McGuire, Thomas Hatch, Anthony Kay, Simeon Woods Richardson, and a few other guys as well. I mean, those are people that are contributing right now to a team that is in position to contend. And, you know, this is very much, I thought it was kind of a very intelligent approach to the deadline. I would like to have seen them. I don't know how in they were in Mike Clevenger. I've got to think because he's a Cleveland guy, they made a call. But
six players, a lot to give for a guy. Where they're at as a team, where they're at as an organization, you know, or can they beat the Yankees? Are they good enough to consistently beat the Rays? I'm not sure they're there yet, right? And so let's talk about this year further to your point is if they, you know, cut down on some walks in their pitching staff, if they cut down on some base running mistakes, if they get some more timely hits, they're 18-15 now. You would think they can win 12 or 13 or 14 more games down the stretch here to make a playoff spot. You don't think that should be any trouble whatsoever. That, to your point, is what they've done here at the trade deadline. They brought in veteran guys who they think are not going to hurt their team to lose games. That's ultimately what it comes down to.
And you made this point when we were talking off the air. 590-590 is the text line, by the way. John Schneider, Blue Jays coach, will join us in a few minutes as well. You made this point when we were talking off air about the Blue Jays and sort of where we are and what we need to see from the team going forward. And you know, I think you have to look at a guy like Robbie Ray and say to yourself, all right, we didn't give up much to get him. We got a left-hander with some velo. We're going into Yankee Stadium, and we're going to face the Yankees 10 times. The Yankees are hitting, what, 219 against
off
lefties?
Of lefties. Mm-hmm.
219. If I'm going to experiment with a guy and it's not going to cost me anything, I would rather be experimenting with a lefty who can hump it up to 95 miles an hour than some slop-tossing right-hander who's going to be sitting 90. So I look at this team now. I look at the back end of the bullpen. I got guys who can hit 96, 97.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not dealing with the slop-tossers anymore. And I'll take my chance with that. I'll take my chance with that going against the Yankees.
Me too. I Robbie Ray, let's simplify it. Pitch him out of the stretch. Get him two pitches. You know, his four-seam slider seems to be swing and miss pitches. Tell him to pitch up with his four-seamer. If he can throw a few more strike ones, his arm angle, his deception that he has, and his power will you know, get some swing and misses, some chases off the slider, eliminate the bad curve, the change in the sinker. Those are the pitches that he's had real issues with. Be a two-pitch guy. Give him four starts. Say go get it for 4 1/3. You don't need him to go 6 or 7 innings. You need to, because of your bullpen and the length you can get there, you only need, you know, 4+. If he can give you 4+ with some punch-outs, we'll take that every time.
Yeah, and I'm going to say this, too. And I think this is, and I don't want to make it sound like we're always blowing smoke up Pete Walker's rear end, but ask Marco Estrada how much money Pete Walker made him. Ask Ken Giles. Mm-hmm. Ask Ken Giles what Pete Walker, and yes, Matt Bushman's been part of that. I'm not going to forget anybody. But Pete Walker has had success with guys who've kind of lost their way in the past, and he has that unique ability, and this may be another guy. And same thing with Taijuan Walker. You know, yeah, these guys are all rentals, but you know, what do they end up liking it here? Players do end up liking it here.
Yeah, the Robbie Ray thing is a little bit tougher too, because he seems like he has confidence issues. Some reason or the other, he felt like he had to lose a ton of weight and totally revamp what he was doing mechanically, which just doesn't make any sense to me coming off the year that you had. So going into this, Petey already knows, you know, it's fragile a little. It's got to be real direct. It's got to be, I suggest maybe this. Try just this. That's what I said. Maybe you simplify it just enough as, I know you got 5 pitches, but let's just use your 2 best ones, which is the elevated heater, the slider, and let's maybe do it from the stretch. That's simple, mechanical. You can get a longer arm action. You're not short-arming it anymore. You can throw strike 1 with it. Maybe that it's just that simple, and maybe they can still start him that way. That would make him a little bit happy. And, Jeff, there is that little element of surprise. Nobody in the American League East has faced him before. So that is that's a key thing, right? Is consistency of I haven't seen the arm action. I haven't seen the ball coming out of his hand. I haven't seen the late life. And that can get you through an inning, 3 or 4 more batters. Right. It'd be an interesting thing to see. I'd rather see him than I would rather see Hatch starting or Merriweather. I don't like Merriweather starting. I like seeing him coming in the 6th inning throwing fuego at 100 and getting you through 4 batters.
And I'll tell you this, too. Right now, like, I think Anthony Kay is going to start for this team at some point. But
it
right now,
like it, yeah.
I like the role he's in right now. I like him coming out of the bullpen right now. Again, you've got a ton of options. And oh, by the way, we got to talk about yesterday's game, 4-3 loss to the Baltimore Orioles. We got to talk a little bit about Chase Anderson now, because Chase Anderson and Tanner Roark, again, the quality at the back of this rotation is a major difference from previous years. I want to talk about the decision to take Chase Anderson out yesterday. Now, we understand why Charlie Montoya said 90 pitches was his limit. Mm-hmm. He'd throw in 81 pitches, I believe 81 or 83 pitches at the time.
Yeah.
But, Kevin, I'm looking at what the Orioles were able to do or not do against him.
Okay, let me, before you keep going, are you complaining more about them taking him out or who they brought in after him?
I'm complaining about taking him out. I give him another inning. Now, I know he's coming up for the third time against the rest of the order, the good part of the order.
And everybody would say that's a no-no in 2020.
Well, except I'm looking at Hanser Alberto, who struck out the first time he saw him, grounded out the second time he saw him. Yes, Anthony Santander doubled. He popped out the second time he saw him. You know, Iglesias grounded out. Nunez was called out in strikes. I get it. I get that there's a certain logic to the third time through thing. But sometimes when I'm positioned to sweep a team, I might want to let my guy go back out there for another inning.
It's 2020. It's not going to happen. And I've said this before. Managers would rather say, well, you know, I don't want to overexpose him. I don't want to show off his secondary pitches too much. It's one of those things. The more you see it, because his secondary pitches aren't great, fastball command yesterday was better. That made those secondary pitches a little bit better. But you don't want to go to the well too many times. And if Wilmer Font comes in and doesn't throw a 2-0 fastball right down the middle, then you're not having this conversation. Maybe the base running's a little bit better in game. So I'm with you a little, but you know, you got all those weapons, sometimes you got to use them.
was a little surprised the Blue Jays didn't add a catcher. Now, we don't know whether or not they thought about it at the deadline. And I understand the organization's all in on Danny Jansen. I'm fine with that. I thought there may have been some discussion about bringing in a guy like Austin Hedges, a pitch framer, a guy who's a solid defensive catcher. I understand that you generally don't fill your entire wish list at one trade deadline. That wasn't the case, though. It's going to be Danny Jansen, Reese McGuire for the rest of the way. We know that Alejandro Kirk was added to the taxi squad for the series against the Marlins, which begins today. So let's talk a little bit about the Jays' catching situation, and let's talk about Danny Jansen and Reese McGuire, who've got three new arms to figure out now, and they're going to be figuring out those three arms in the middle of a pennant race, in the middle of a playoff race. It's going to come fast. It's going to come furious. It's going to be a lot of on-the-spot learning that will have to be done by the Blue Jays catchers. What challenges does that present the organization? John Schneider will join us to discuss that. Baseball Central continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Right, a reminder that the Blue Jays will start a series against the Miami Marlins. Today, first of two games against the Marlins, then it's off to Fenway Park, take on the Boston Red Sox. It was a hectic day around the Blue Jays yesterday. And not just on the field, but off the field as well. John Schneider was involved in the goings-on on the field, and he joins us on Baseball Central. John, thank you so much for doing this. Always good to talk to you. Look, you guys were playing a game in the middle of the trade deadline. I know it's happened before. Obviously, teams play while the trade deadline is going on, but this is such a different season and such a different time. I'm just wondering what the mood was in the dugout yesterday, especially, I'm sure the players knew there were going to be some moves made.
Hey guys, how you doing? Thanks for having me, first of all, as always. It was kind of a crazy day. It was hectic, as you said, and it was, I think, everyone kind of expected some moves to be made, and as they kind of slowly trickle in, they kind of happened right as the game was starting, and then kind of throughout the game a little bit. But everyone's excited. You know, everyone's been excited for the past few weeks, really. And I think that, you know, the moves that we made put us in a really good spot, going forward the next couple of weeks, kind of down the stretch run a little bit. So the loss, in the day is kind of the crazy extra inning game yesterday, too. But we're kind of, really happy with the way we're playing right now and kind of where we stand.
Snides, how much pressure does this put on you as a catching coach when you have new pitchers coming in with a shortened season and just getting your catchers prepared to call a game?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, Jano and Reese and, Caleb that's here, and Kirky, who just got here. I think that our analytics department, Pete and Matt Bushman, Pete Walker, Matt Bushman do a great job of kind of, dissecting these guys a little bit. For me, the first thing I did, I told our catchers, I forwarded the phone numbers and said, get to know these guys a little bit, Stripling and Robbie Ray, and kind of pick their brains and kind of just make yourselves, available to them as they start arriving. So it's not really, it's not so much pressure. I think it's kind of more ways that we can be creative, I think, to use these guys. And, the first couple of days will be a little bit of a crash course and getting to know, the personality and the pitcher that's arriving and kind of what makes them feel comfortable. And I think that we have a pretty good game plan as an organization of how we want to utilize these guys that we've acquired. So it's just a matter of kind of getting everyone on the same page and going from there.
Okay, how about a guy that's been struggling like a Robbie Ray? Obviously, 2019, he dominated. He's a strikeout guy. He's left-handed. It's odd. He has electric stuff. But this year, mechanically, losing weight, for a guy coming in like that, what would the conversation be between you and your catchers?
First and foremost, just kind of getting to know him and what makes him good when he's good. And trying to just really stick to those tendencies. Like I said, we have a plan of how we want to kind of deploy him. There's certain things that, you know, clubs do differently. There's certain things that make pitchers more successful than others. And I think with a guy like him, just in, you know, a few conversations we've had as a staff and with the catchers, just really trying to get him on the plate and allowing his stuff to kind of just do what it does. You know, the strikeouts are there, and, you know, I know the walks and the homers are there too. You know, everyone's aware of that. But just trying to get him back to, you know, when he was really good, and really just kind of focusing on putting the ball where he needs to put it to be successful. And then for the catchers, it's really kind of guiding him, whether it's the way they set up or conversations they've had or target placement, kind of, you know, getting him to feel as comfortable as possible to execute those pitches.
Yeah, it was interesting. You mentioned Caleb Joseph, and, of course, Alejandro Kirk's been added to the taxi squad as well. Tell me a little bit about Caleb Joseph's role in this team, because he's not playing, but, you know, I keep hearing a lot about him from people around the organization, and I mean that in a positive way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he's about as professional as you're ever going to see, you know, in the game of baseball, and getting to know him in spring training and through summer camp and the season and things like that. Student of the game. He's helped Danny Jansen and Reese McGuire out so much behind the scenes in terms of game planning and trying to find tendencies of the opposition, trying to find tendencies of our own pitchers. You know, really can't really ask for much more than he's doing in the clubhouse with those guys and with the whole team. You know, he's the first guy in after a win, and he's getting everyone going. Just a total pro in everything that he does. I've learned from him just as much as the catchers have learned from him in the short amount of time he's been here. So he's kind of the glue that's holding everything together right now, and it's really cool to watch.
Yeah, Snides, I got to ask you, Danny Jansen, obviously behind the plate, he's getting a little bit better at calling the game. I want to ask you about his offense. Are we being a little too unfair with him when it comes to his production offensively?
Well, at the end of the day, you know, it's the league is based on production, right? And it's based on numbers. And I think that everything that we've seen from the kid for as long as he's been in our system, and all of the, you know, you can dive in deep to his contact rate and his walk rate, and you can kind of project a little bit. And I think that it's, you know, up to this point, really, it just kind of really hasn't translated consistently. There's been runs where he's been really good, and there's been runs, you know, where he's been grinding. And to put it plainly, you know, it's like, yeah, he wants to do more. And I think that, you know, no one puts more pressure on himself than he does to do more. And coming out of spring training back in February and March, where it looked like he really kind of turned the corner, and having that layoff for a couple months probably hurt him a little bit. But, you know, you can't say enough about how he separates his offense and defense. And I think that, you know, he knows that, you know, the organization has confidence in him, that the pitching staff has confidence in him. And we're all kind of waiting for the bat to kind of come around. And I think it will. I really think it will. When you look at, you know, his contact ability, you look at, you know, hard hit ball ability, you look at kind of all those things and his track record in the minors, you know, hopefully it kind of starts to even out here for him quickly.
Yeah, I think maybe more than any other player on the team, and I don't want you to talk for the front office, but John, I think maybe more than any other player on the team, that trade deadline was a vote of confidence in Danny Jansen. Not a surprising one from my point of view. But, you know, look, I was one of those people. I thought maybe they'd look at adding a veteran catcher. You know, maybe you've got the veteran catcher already in Caleb Joseph. It's just that he's not, you know, he's doing all the stuff the veteran catcher does. He's just not in the lineup. But to me, if I'm Danny Jansen, I'm waking up this morning and saying, all right, man, it's my job. You know?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with it.
I think there's some truth to that, probably. I mean, it's, you know, I was never, you know, good enough or fortunate enough to be, you know, up at this level and, you know, having my name thrown out there. So I don't know what it feels like for him personally, but I'm sure that today was probably a little bit of a deep breath for him, sure, because, you know, you're human and you read stuff and you hear stuff, but, you know, it's part of the business. And I think that, He understands the confidence that we have in him, both at the plate and behind the plate. So, you know, hopefully it is a little bit of a refresh button here for him going forward.
Okay, Snides, you know, I want to talk to you about Kevin Biggio, and I want to ask you what the next step offensively you think will be for him. I read a stat, this interesting one, that he's reached base 115 out of the 133 career games he's played. What do you think the next step should be for him offensively?
I think you have the on-base percentage, you have, power, you have all that kind of stuff with him. And I think when you look at a guy like him, he's different than he was last year. He's different than he was 2 years ago in the minors. And he's always kind of evolving. I think the next step for him is, coupling kind of that on-base percentage with a higher average. And I think that comes with, two strikes. I think it comes with maybe even early in the counts. Pitchers know that he's going to work the count and take advantage of some pitches over the heart of the plate earlier in counts. But, you look at him and he gets better every year. He really does. And the on-base is one thing. But really, I think, Kev, the next step is just when you look up, the OPS is even a little bit higher because, the average goes from whatever it is now. I don't even really know. But it goes up to the, consistent 270, 280 range. And you're looking at really a pretty complete player.
Another young player we wanted to ask you about was Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I mean, we always ask you about him because you've seen him an awful lot in the minor leagues as well.
Yep.
We're starting to see, I think, John, the guy that everybody kept telling us about in the minors, and I found it interesting that I was going to say Bo Bichette, but it was Dante Bichette made a point the other day about essentially saying, look, I want him to be a line drive hitter. He didn't say I want him to be a line drive hitter, but he said, forget about worrying about your launch angle and trying to hit up and all that. Just hit the ball hard, be a line drive hitter. And then he came out and said, this is a guy that can, this is a guy that can hit 300 as well as hit for power. And it almost seems as if Vladdy's taken that and run with it.
Yeah. I mean, I think, when you look at him in the minors and you look at him when he kind of had that breakout year in 2018, that's kind of the hitter he is. I think that he's the type of guy that can hit well over 300, and the power is going to come. We're talking about a young kid still. And I think over the past couple of weeks, the biggest thing for him has been just being on time, with that toe tap that he's got. And I've talked to Kev about it a little bit. And when he's able to do that early, and I always say kind of put the brakes on when that stride foot hits, he's creating, all sorts of torque and force, and he hits the ball so hard. But I think because you see the raw power in him, it's easy to say, okay, he's going to be a 50 home run a year guy. But, and you watch what he does at the home run derby and things like that, but he's really a hitter before he is a power hitter. And I think what Dante said makes perfect sense. And, over the course of his career, those things will kind of translate. And I think he probably got caught up in trying to get the ball in the air a little bit too much, and that causes his swing to get a little bit long, that speed to go down a little bit. But as long as he's hitting the ball hard and he's on time, the home runs are going to come. But then you're looking at really, you're looking at a guy that's going to hit over 300, in the 20 to 30 home run range, over the course of a regular season. So, but where he is right now is kind of scratching the surface, really, of what he is going to be. Not hopefully what he's going to be, but what he is going to be, because, he is just so physically gifted in the box.
John, it was great of you to do this, as always. We appreciate it. Thanks
no problem,
so much.
Guys.
Enjoy Florida and stay safe.
You're the best.
Yes. You know it, guys. Thanks, Kev.
Take care. See you later.
John Schneider, Blue Jays coach. And that interesting thoughts from John Schneider about Kevin Biggio as well. Kevin, and that is, man, it's kind of fun to watch a guy develop right in front of you, and you think about all the strengths of Kevin Biggio's approach at the plate. If he gets a little, I hesitate to use the word aggressive because I think we overuse it, but if he starts hitting some of those fastballs early in counts, it's going to put a thought in the pitcher's head that this guy's not going to wait four or five pitches. And I'm not saying that's a negative because it's working for him. But if he can do that, then you're going to see that average go up. And, by the time he's 26 years old, you're going to have a pretty complete player because he does a lot of other stuff real well.
Yeah, controlled aggression. That's the thing at the plate. It's getting a good pitch to hit. It's not going outside the strike zone. It's trying to do damage when you swing the bat. That's – who he's starting to try and be. You know, I love him in the leadoff spot. He gives everybody information right out the gate on what this guy's throwing, what the breaking ball looks like, what the life on the fastball looks like. You know, he's seeing 4, 5, 6 pitches in at bat early in mm-hmm. games, which is just huge for that guy standing on the on-deck circle. You know, Bichette's feeding off Biggio. It's not the other way around. And I think that's a stable point of this lineup for years to come is his eye and that line-to-line stuff that Bichette has, the 1-2 punch. And then you add the big-time home run hitter behind them. Now you're talking about, you know, a threat throughout the American League East for years to come. He's just – I don't know if I wanted to see if he's waiting for the shoe to drop kind of thing. Or is he really this good? Can he play this many positions and not hurt your team and take that to the plate and keep doing what he's doing? It's a lot of fun to watch him do these kind of things.
Yeah. The thing I like about Kevin Biggio, and this may be a little too old-timey baseball, but I think, Barker, you played the game. You'd probably feel the same way. I want the ball hit to him late in the game.
Yeah.
Late in a close game. Wherever he is in the field, I want the ball hit to him.
I got to be honest with you. I'd rather have him at the plate. And that says a lot. He's going to not go outside the strike zone. He's going to make that guy get him out. And not every guy in that lineup can do that. He's one of them.
590-590 is the text line. You have a lot of questions about the Jays trade deadline. You got questions for me. You got questions for Barker. We'll get to it next. Baseball Central continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. First pitch tonight from Miami will be at 6:37 on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 1 as the Jays open their series with the Miami Marlins. Sixto Sanchez on the mound for the Miami Marlins. Hyun-Jin Ryu for the Toronto Blue Jays as the Jays start a... Let's see, they're in Miami for 2, Boston for 4. Then they're back in Buffalo to play the Yankees. A 3-game series, 3 out of 10 games against the Yankees. And, Kevin, that's where the rubber's going to meet the road with this particular team. And to that end, we'll get to the text line. 590-590 is the text line. Keep them coming. We will get to them. You look at the New York Yankees. The New York Yankees have had 5 players make their Major League debut this month.
Yep.
Or did in August. Brian Cashman had a remarkable media availability yesterday where he suggested that, you know what, the combination of COVID-19, changing our medical team, overhauling our training staff, he said the numbers will suggest to you that if you do that, things may become a bit wobbly physically. But, you know, I'll tell you what, if I'm the Yankees right now, like, I understand why they stood pat at the deadline, because they're getting a lot of mileage out of the Luke Voits of the world, and they're getting some guys back. But there are some real concerns about Aaron Judge and whether or not he's going to be able to stay in the field. I was thinking about this yesterday, you know. The Rays are the Rays. The Orioles are going to Oriole. The Red Sox are going to be rebuilding. That's going to take a couple of years. That's a bigger rebuild than people think it is, because there's nothing. There's nothing in the pitching end for the Red Sox. There's a real window of opportunity opening here for the Jays. The Yankees are going to be good. Don't get me. The Yankees are never going to cry poor. But, Kevin, the Yankees have a lot of guys who break down. They have a lot of guys with a history of injuries. Stanton, Judge, Chapman, maybe not so much. Paxton, they've invested a lot in guys who are going to get hurt or whose career suggests they're going to get hurt. So if I'm the Blue Jays, this is one of the things I was thinking about at the trade deadline. You know, I kind of want to keep my powder dry for the offseason and next trade deadline. Let's kind of see where things are then.
Yeah, I don't think the Red Sox is going to take them long. It's the Red Sox. They're you know, they'll lose for a little while. They're not going to lose long. The Yankees, you mentioned those guys. You had Torres and Britton to the mix. That's big-time losses. You know, mm-hmm. Brian Cashman, what's he going to do? He can't go out and feel, you know, five or six different spots in a trade deadline. It is what it is. And I will say the home field advantage has really hurt the Yankees. Going to Yankee Stadium and playing them with that crowd, it adds a whole different element. And when they don't have that, it makes that team a little bit normal.
Yeah, it's just another ballpark with
it. With no fans in it, and that's a big deal. So, you know, Brian Cashman, you can understand why he didn't really go out and do anything. I'm with you, Judge, Stanton. They're going to have to stay on the field. You know, you can only blame your department so many times for a guy that doesn't know how to take care of himself. Whether it's how you stay on the field is an art. Trust me, I played on some of the worst fields that's ever been put on Earth. And to actually play on them every day and actually be able to go out and do your job to the fullest is not the easiest thing.
590-590, the text line. All right, we've got we've got maybe the most optimistic text of all time.
Ooh.
It's from Elias. How can we be sure that Hernandez or Grichuk 2.0 or 3.0 has happened? They have always been streaky. How do we know that the Jays didn't give up a lot? We don't know who the players to be named later are going to be. Actually, that's not true. Kendall Williams is one of the guys going for Ross Stripling, and he was their 13th rated prospect by MLB Pipeline. That was high for Ross Stripling, only because Ross Stripling is under control for a couple of years, and there is a dollar value attached to that, and there is a dollar value attached to prospects. So that is that. Do they pull their starters out too early? They will burn out their bullpen by micromanaging, overmanaging, overusing it. So there's the optimistic text of the day.
There's 25 more games, Jeff. They're not about two years from now. They're talking about the last 25 games of this season.
Yeah.
That's what they're trying to win.
Right, and let's see what Hernandez and Grichuk are. This is the perfect time to do it. It's better to do it now than punt on them or be finding out next year. Let's see what they are. To me, this is almost the perfect season for the Jays because we're gonna see how these guys hold up, even though it is going to be an odd postseason stretch. We're going to see how they hold up with some pressure on them, and that's not a bad thing.
And the Red Sox are retooling, and the Yankees are hurt. That helps a lot too.
I want to answer this question. Dane in Barrie, Ontario, wants to know what a player to be named later and cash considerations in a trade means. Well, cash considerations is a fancy way of saying we're throwing in some money or they're throwing in some money. We just don't want to tell you how much it is. It used to be that if you put in more than $1 million in a deal, the commissioner's office had to sign off on it. So I don't know if that's still the case. That's what cash considerations are. Player to be named later, it can be, frankly, a player that the organizations have not decided on. The organizations may be given choose one of these five players and do it at the end of the year. And right now, since there are no minor leagues, you know, a lot of organizations are going to say, let's give us some time to look at your minor league system. So a player to be named later is just, it's an agreement that I will give you one of my players at some point down the road. And I just want to say this very quickly, that when Gord Ash tells a story, back when work visas were an issue, he used to make deals for work visas because the Jays is a Canadian team. They needed work visas. So teams would trade future considerations would actually be a work visa. So there's technically a difference between future considerations and a player to be named later.
Whatever it takes to get what you want, Jeff. That's what I say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Dan and Arnprior, with the three new pitchers acquired via trade and the likes of Pearson, Shoemaker, and Giles coming back at some point, who is being bumped out of the bullpen? That is interesting. Bark, I look at this. I don't think we're going to see Matt Shoemaker again this year. I think Nate Pearson, if he comes back, is probably going to be used in the bullpen. At this point, quite frankly, I would be real cautious with Nate Pearson. Ken Giles, we're led to believe, could be back this week.
Yeah, you're probably looking at Wilmer Font. He may not see some big time innings. You know, the Waggus Packs, the Sean Reed Foleys, the Yamaguchis. you know, you're going with your main guys. That's Bass, Dolise, Kay, Barucci, Hatch, Giles, Cole, yep. Giles. You know, Merriweather, you could probably throw in there because he throws 100.
Sean Reed Foley. Now, there was a time. First of all, Sean Reed Foley's an interesting case. We saw him this weekend. He's a holdover from the previous administration, and you often know what happens. New GMs come in, they like to get rid of the other guys a lot of the times. Mm-hmm. There was a thought when Alex Anthopoulos was here that Sean Reed Foley would ultimately go to the bullpen. They would maybe be a closer. Now, control issues obviously have impacted on him this career. But, Kevin, I like what I've seen from him out of the bullpen. Small sample size, I admit.
Yeah.
Do you think that is, if he has a future with this organization, I don't know if he does, given the arms that are here, but is he at this point in his career a reliever?
Yeah, I think so. I think the velo's ticked up a little bit. The secondary pitch is has a little bit more bite to it. He's a little bit more mechanically sound. You know, he needs to sharpen that up a little bit, pitch over the rubber a little bit more, get out of the glove a little bit quicker, throw strike one a little bit more. But I think the power's there. You know, he's got a little bit of attitude, too, which is I kind of like that. You, if you notice, every time Petey walks out there, he gives him the stare. Like, how dare you come out here and talk to me kind of thing. So that's kind of funny. But, yeah, you can never have too many guys that throw hard. And then you can teach them how to add a little bit of a secondary pitch, make it look like a strike, and command the stone a little bit more. So, yeah, I like him. I like him so far.
Got to ask you about the final out of the game. This is a Jeff Blair question from Jeff in Hamilton. Do you have an issue with the way that game ended? See, I liked it. I liked the send for a couple of reasons. First of all, the Orioles have been horrible defensively. Like, if you're Luis Rivera, they missed the cutoff, man. They stink defensively. I don't think you would say this, but given where you are in the order, too, I like the send. And given how successful Lourdes Gurriel Jr. has been, I don't know how you felt about it, but yeah. I liked the send yesterday.
I talked to Louie after the game, and he said he saw the first relay guy run to second base, the big loop throw from right field, yep. A catcher playing first base. Iglesias had to run over and make a perfect play, and the guy standing on the on-deck circle. Now, Louie didn't say that, but if you think about it, the guy standing on the on-deck circle and Danny Jansen's hitting a .150. I know that should not always come into play, nope. But third base coaches will get super aggressive depending on who's up hitting next.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I know it became a I know that it became a talking point after the game on social media, but I just had no problem with it, and I wanted to make sure that we dealt with that as well, because you know what, I have this thing, I like defending third base coaches because they make an awful lot of snap decisions. I'm with you, Bark. I thought it was the right decision. Thanks for doing this. We'll be back tomorrow. The Miami Marlins and the Blue Jays tonight. 6:37 is the first pitch. Don't go anywhere. We've got Raptors basketball to get you set for it. Stephen Brunt will join me next with Writer's Block.